Sammy came home from school one day to find an enormous elephant right in the middle of the family room. And as if that wasn't bad enough, everyone in the family was ignoring it or pretending it wasn't there. Members of the family came and went, but nobody even mentioned the elephant. The elephant wasn't only ignored by the family in the house. It wasn't talked about by them outside the home either. You would think that good friends would have mentioned the elephant, for surely some of them had become aware of its presence when they came to visit Sammy's home. But because the family never spoke about it, the friends didn't bring it up either. Even Sammy's own friends learned not to talk about it to him. Sometimes when family friends got together with them or without them, when the family wasn't around, then, they would mention that elephant all right, to the point about gossiping of the beast. Though they still felt quite powerless to do anything about it, even to dare to talk to the family. There was a concerned friend of Sammy's parents who would often visit, who felt it a duty to bring the whole matter out into the open. But every time this person tried to broach the topic, someone in the family would cleverly change the subject or suggest that the friend have another drink or say, "Well, it's getting late. Don't you think you should be getting home soon?" The neighbors, they suspected something strange in the home next door. For as you can imagine, an elephant isn't the easiest animal to keep quiet or unnoticed. But no matter how many hints the neighbors dropped, the pretense went on, and soon even the neighbors learned to go along with simply not asking any questions about the elephant. Even at church, when the pastor preached at great length about the danger of elephants, nobody thought it might be their elephant the minister was talking about. When a missionary one Sunday came to the church and told about faraway lands where elephants were destroying entire villages and what great church the work was doing among the elephant-plagued people of those lands, the Sunday offering was the best ever. And Sammy's family wrote a large check. Elephants. That was an imaginary story, of course. There wasn't a real elephant in anybody's living room. But what might you imagine could the elephant represent? What are some of the elephants or problems, big ones, that appear in people's lives around you? What are some elephants in your life? As you heard the story, what was your imagination putting in place of the elephant? Imagine if that was your elephant. There's at least three ways we can deal with those kinds of elephants or giants in our lives. We can hide from them, or we can just heed them, or we can handle them on different terms and defeat them with even the smallest amounts of faith that God gives us. You can hide from a giant. Almost pretend it's not there. But every day you wake up, there's that giant staring you in the face again. And neither you or anyone wants to take it on, so it's kind of just there. That's what's happening in the Israelite camp day after day. Goliath would come out to face the Israelites, to challenge them, and not one soldier was willing to take the giant to task. So they would just sit in the war camp day after day, almost pretending there wasn't a battle to be fought. And what a strange sight that must have been to see. Two camps set for war on separate hills. Every morning the giant would make his challenge. Nobody would rise to meet the giant for battle. So both sides sat all day. They ate their meals, polished their weapons, and then they went back to bed. And you can bet there was fear in the Israelite camp. But every day these soldiers trained for battle would shrink from their duty, almost pretending there was no giant defying them. And they would hide from Goliath. People can get pretty good at hiding giants. Not just ones named Goliath. We have our own giants that we're all good at hiding. Some of us hide personal addictions, family problems. Some workplaces are good at hiding and protecting giant bullies that nobody seems to want to tackle. Churches can be stopped in their tracks when they avoid facing the more real and tougher questions that face us. It's not really good to hide our giants. There's a second, as unhelpful way to deal with giants. We can heed them. Not just hiding, but fearing them, heeding them so much that they overpower us. And that's what was starting to happen in the Israelite camp as well. King Saul simply began heeding Goliath, following the giant's orders, playing by the oversized Philistine's rules. It's no small coincidence that in the chapter before this one, chapter 16, that was read 2 weeks ago and also last week, a young shepherd boy is anointed king to replace Saul because Saul simply wasn't doing the job. Oh, Saul was a big man himself, too. He was even the people's choice. Saul was handsome. He had tough skin. He was real king material, the people thought. A good head on his shoulders. But the problem was it all went to Saul's head. And the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul. 1 Samuel 16 verse 14 says. And when the Spirit of the Lord leaves someone, that creates. When the Spirit of God leaves us, that creates a gigantic space for the spirit of the evil one to enter in. There's no neutral ground. You might have wondered why Saul didn't do something more bold in that valley. Maybe that could give us a hint. Who said Saul had to fight this battle on Goliath's terms? Don't we all remember Old Testament stories of Israelite battles where God gives the terms of battle? Remember Aaron and Hur lifting Moses' arms till the battle is won against the Amalekites? Remember the marching around the walls of Jericho? Remember Gideon getting orders from God to downsize his army before battle? Always on God's terms. Those were times and people when the Spirit of the Lord was among them. And here, of course, the Spirit of God had departed from Saul. And when we do not heed the instructions of God, we heed the orders of the evil one. It's interesting that 40 days the Philistine comes forward, morning and night. 40 days, a very familiar number representing dark times for God's people. 40, the number of days and nights of flooding when Noah and his family are in the ark. 40, the number of years that Israel wanders in the wilderness. 40, the number of days that Jesus is in the wilderness to be tempted by the evil one, and shows that he is not willing and will not go to battle on the evil one's terms. Jesus, the Son of God, sent to redeem the world, unlike Saul or any Israelite or any of us today, doesn't hide from temptations, heeds any attention to the evil one, but overcomes the devil once and for all, striking a blow to Satan from head to toe like never before, because he handles evil and fear not on the terms of the evil one, but on God's terms. In Jesus, more than David in our story, God knows how to deal with giants. Not hiding from them, not heeding them, but handling giants not on their terms, but on God's terms. In this Old Testament story, David represents how God handles big problems. Facing it square on, naming the giant for who it stands for. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of God? Why are we taking our marching orders from this guy, David says. And then when this shepherd boy finally convinces everyone that he can go out to battle without oversized armor, we find out what kind of metal this spirited young boy is made of and who he stands for. You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, David says, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty. And that's what this sleepy Israelite camp needed to hear. Someone of conviction and fired up faith for the name of God and for God's honor. Just a young little shepherd boy with enough small faith to take on a giant fear. It's often thought that David's defeat of Goliath is some kind of a supernatural miracle. And I don't doubt that God played a role in how that stone went just where it needed to be. But in a book called David and Goliath, a writer by the name of Malcolm Gladwell makes the point that maybe it wasn't so much just a miracle as it was David using the tools at his disposal to defeat the giant rather than trying to meet the giant on his terms. In the ancient world as now, there were different kinds of militia. Primarily, there was the infantry, where it was soldier against soldier with weapons, the kind of weapons that Goliath had with him. And the Philistines offered a single warrior to represent each fighting camp. And as the Philistines' warrior, Goliath seems formidable. He's a giant. No wonder people hide. No wonder Saul's heeding his orders. Even after the shepherd boy convinces Saul to send him out, Saul wants David to play by Goliath's rules by giving him the armor. And it's not just that the armor doesn't fit. David doesn't need the armor because he's not planning to fight Goliath's game. He's not going out as infantry. He's going out with his sling, which is going to make the less mobile giant very vulnerable. See, there's a reason, possibly, that Goliath even says, come to me. Because the closer any warrior would come to him, the more vulnerable they would be. Malcolm Gladwell and others actually suggest that as frightened people were by Goliath's size, it's very possible that this giant's eyesight was limited. And so he says, come closer to me. And then the amazing childlike way that David defeats Goliath, forever remembered in children's stories and songs. Only a boy named David, only a rippling brook. Only a boy named David, but five little stones he took. Only a boy named David, only a rippling brook. And then the song concludes, and one little stone went up in the air, and the giant came tumbling down. The older we get, probably the more childish this song can seem to be. But maybe also because the older we get, the more giants, elephants, we hide or heed. Instead of naming them and handling them not on their terms, to defeat them. If you've ever faced giant problems, this is a classic story to understand. Don't hide from them. Don't heed them. Handle them not on their terms, but on the terms and the gifts that God gives each and every one of us. It's really a story of how God takes on giants. Not with more hate and cruelty and fear, but with love. See how God sends his very own son into this world as a vulnerable infant, tempted in the desert, suffers and dies, but rises victorious over death and sin. On the stormy seas, Jesus doesn't hide from nor heed the waves. He simply says, "Peace, be still." With Jesus on the cross, God fights with different weapons. He takes on evil with the weapon of love and sacrifice. Not hiding or heeding, but handling the enemy of sin and defeating hatred with divine love. Communion is our reminder of how God gives us the smallest of faith to overcome the greatest of fears.